She's a doctor.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dobek, and she's a dietitian.
Hey, I'm Hannah Schuyler, and together we are
the Doctor-Dietitian Collab. And today we are so excited to bring you a bonus episode from one of my favorite episodes we have ever recorded with our special guest, Laura Grabo. We did this last summer, in the summer of 2023, and we talk a lot about emotional hunger, grieving food, and that very, very important head work piece that I think a lot of us just don't touch on enough to be really successful in your bariatric journey.
Yes, and this episode is awesome because Laura is incredible. She is such an expert in this field. She's been over 20 years working with bariatric patients as a therapist. And so we're just so excited to talk about all the things. We focus a lot on grief after bariatric surgery. And I don't think that that gets talked about enough or even recognized that that could be what people are experiencing in their journey. They may not label it as grief, you know?
Completely agree. That was probably in my career, one of the biggest aha moments was her explanation of grief and you're losing more than weight and how we kind of go through these waves of grief from shock and denial and bargaining and depression and sadness and anger and finally getting more into that acceptance phase and all of just the important hard work you have to do in self-reflection and identifying what is happening to you in the early post-op phases and then beyond.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we also talk a lot about, you know, the choices that we make with our diets. And, you know, a lot of times we think that it's so automatic to eat things when realistically we have that autonomy, we have that choice. And so, you know, understanding why you're making those choices in your diet after surgery and all of that. So, and some alternative things you can do, you know, when you're feeling these ways, because it's one thing for us to talk about how you're going to feel, but we got to provide a solution, right? So Laura is great about that and giving some ideas for, you know, how to get through these times.
Yeah, she gives a lot of practical tips. I think that's the best part. There's a lot of action items where you can really just apply it to your life. And I think there's a lot of great ideas that she gives. So we don't want to just scratch the surface. We hope that you go very, very deep.
Yes.
And enjoy. Let's listen to this episode again.
Absolutely. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Yes.
I am so
it's
honored
so good
you
to
invited
have you.
Me. This is
we
great.
We are so excited to have you and that we can make this happen. Do you want to quickly give a little bit of an introduction to yourself?
Sure. Absolutely. So my name is Laura Grabo, and believe it or not, I have been working in obesity medicine as a therapist for 20 years. I started in 2003, and I do what I call the headwork piece to medical and surgical weight loss, which I know we're going to talk more about today. I'm coming to you from Grand Rapids, Michigan, but I work all over. I own my own practice. So what do I do in my own practice? I see individual therapy patients. I also do some bariatric coaching. I also have created and launched my own course. I do group work. I do professional speaking, not only to patients, but also to my peers. So a little bit of everything. And I come on wonderful podcasts like this because I'm very passionate about getting headwork skills out to people who need them.
Basically, we've done almost 40 of these podcasts now. We've been doing this for over half of a year. We are just seeing, though, every single topic we do, whether it be nutrition related, even constipation somehow, sex, you name it, everything has the mental health component, and we haven't dove in appropriately there. So I really want to hear from you about just the emotional side, the coping side, the mental health side, and how do we help people to really just navigate those most challenging waters?
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you for allowing me to be the first mental health person on your amazing podcast. Thank you for that. And even though I've been working in obesity medicine for 20 years, I do feel mental health is still the missing piece of the treatment plan. And I hope one day that I can stop saying it's missing. I believe our patients get a lot of education on the tool they're choosing. And I know, I believe in your clinic, you do both medical and surgical weight loss, correct?
Right. Yeah.
So they get a lot of education on their tool. They get a lot of education on movement. They get a lot of education on nutrition. Hannah, that's your expertise. Yeah. And that answers the how, right? How am I going to treat my disease of obesity? but you have to go deeper. What I've learned to have lifelong success, and I believe this is what your patient has been talking about with you, the one who's getting so close to her surgery date, is why do I eat? Mm-hmm. You need tools. We need to not only answer how do I treat my disease of obesity, but why do I eat? Because all of us have, all of us, we struggle with obesity or not, all of us have an emotional relationship with food. And the day you go in the operating room, that relationship is changed. Mm. Okay. Mm. And to use your patient's words that, you know, I cope with food, you know, she's not alone, right? Probably all of us kind of cope with food some, but not all of us have the disease of obesity. So there's like multifaceted things going on. But when I, you know, train to be a therapist, like, you know, there's probably like nutrition 101 and surgery 101. Well, there's therapy 101. What we are trained in is when our clients come to us and there's some unhealthy coping skills present, we never take them away right away, right? So first of all, you work with the client that they can see like the skill isn't working for them, which is probably why they're coming to your office anyways. They have some behavior that's not helpful. Two, once they realize like, huh, I don't know if this emotional eating thing is really that great for me. We start talking about, well, what are some other things you could try? And what are some of the needs you think you're meeting with emotional need? And is there emotional eating? Is there healthier ways you can do that? And we start practicing and you get a homework assignment and they practice and then they come back to your therapy session or the group. You can do this in group as well. How did that work for you? Well, guess what? When you have bariatric surgery, you don't do that. And there's often a need, right? There are medical needs. Obesity is a disease. We need to treat it. I do think often the behavioral education, my piece, is much more impactful post-surgery anyways. And so, but that coping skill is often taken out immediately. And we need to educate patients about that. That's why we need a mental health person to say, okay, right? And so if we get that call, so like I said, I've worked with bariatric patients a long time. I'm in private practice now, but I used to be in a very large integrated practice here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And if a patient is calling that first week or second week saying they're so hungry after bariatric surgery, we know from a physiological standpoint, they cannot be physically hungry. They're emotionally hungry. So then they would get referred to me and providing that education and that sort of thing. So wow, there's so much I can talk about, but that's my role. No, like, I call it the missing piece.
Well, I mean, the thing about you that is just remarkable is that you just like really get it, you know, like, and I think that you talk to people in a way that just totally demonstrates that you get it. You're empathetic, you're compassionate. And when you said, man, I hate the fact that here we are, I've been doing this for 20 years, all day, every day, grinding this out, but yet there's still such a scarcity in this key pillar to the overall success of the patient struggling with this disease state or just struggling, you know, with this whole thing in general. So like, how do you scale you? Like, how do you help more people? How do you, like you said, you're helping to train other bariatric therapists in this very, very specific niche of therapy and mental health work. But like, how do we do this? Like, how do we do this better?
I know. I think it, you know, it starts when you look at the team, and when we look at the team, we have to not underestimate the role. I think for too long when it comes to bariatric surgery, and I think we're just starting to get there with obesity medicine and medical weight loss, but it's been, we need a surgeon, we need an internist, we need a dietitian, we need an exercise physiologist. And the only thing we need psych for, mental health for, is that pre-op surgical veil, which is important. It's important, but it's not the most important, because obesity is a chronic disease. And lifetime, you're going to need lifetime treatment. And what we're learning, what I've learned from my own practice with patients, with the research will support, my intervention is much more impactful post-surgery than it is pre-surgery. Now, if there's pre-significant, you know, some significant psychiatric concerns, some significant substance abuse concerns before surgery, of course, right? We need to address those before. But I think it's educating the surgeons that we need this. Obviously, emotional eating is the number one reason our bariatric patients will gain weight or regain lost weight. We see the same with medical weight loss. So when we start talking about outcome, that we need to be giving. We want to give our patients every tool possible to have success with treating their disease of obesity. And if we don't talk about my piece, the headwork piece, you're not giving them every tool. It's like showing up to play baseball without a ball.
That makes sense. Because, you know, it's interesting. People always talk about physical health versus mental health. And it's kind of like, why are those two things separated into two categories? Right. Like, your mental health is part of your physical health and vice versa. Like, they interplay so much. So it's just kind of like, why do we allow that to be this its own category over here that's separate? Like, your brain is part of your body. Exactly. Like, yeah, you know, so
is health.
Right, exactly. And I would imagine too, another probably barrier for this would be insurance as well, and accessibility of mental health resources.
Right. And general. Yeah, you probably know more than I do, Dr. Dovick, that post-surgery, I believe insurance, at least in the past, would pay for a dietitian visit, possibly an exercise visit, but a visit with someone like me, nope.
Right. Well, that's what I wanted to really tackle that. And we have a motto over here. We are pleasantly but persistent. We are pleasantly persistent. And I'm very open about it. We need to rock the whole way we're treating it, because the current system is this feeling patients and people have of getting herded into an operating room and then, what do I do now? Or even like, well, forget about it. You know, the pricing in the US is so expensive. I'm going to Mexico. So I even signed up knowing I wasn't going to get any aftercare. And I was like, I just need this tool so bad. But they're like, you're saying there's so much about it. So the one thing that you mentioned that I really, I want to like focus on is that the pre-op evaluation, the psych evaluation, the check in the box. And I think a lot of times, unfortunately, it is just that. It's just like, get this requirement done. I have never felt that any psych evaluation has really truly helped me, like in one way or another. Like, okay, I feel like there's no significant risk. I approve them for a surgery. Great, whatever. But I wish that we could, and I think we can, persistently go together, bundle all of these services together so that there's not all this administrative burden, go to the payers and say, you need to have, same with Hannah, I'm sure she could say this, after surgery is when nutrition is most important. You don't know how your taste will change, what you'll tolerate, what your preferences are. Same with the mental health. You have no idea. Like, it's the fear of the unknown. What will I feel like, think like, how will I deal with the body dysmorphia and all the other emotional things that come with it? We need to do therapy and ongoing head work after surgery, period. Mm-hmm. You have to. I think it's so critical.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And then let's talk about that early post-op period. And I've told you my analogy on this before. And I just want to see, like you said, people call into the office, I'm hungry, what's going on? And you're like, all right, well, it's actually not physiologically possible. So it's my turn, guys. I'll take this one. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's this analogy of patients feeling like they're in this very deep, committed relationship to food, and they almost like feel bad for it, like they're like leaving it behind, or it's almost that phenomenon, I got to finish my plate because it's kind of like embedded in me. But it's like this relationship, like a boyfriend and a girlfriend, and it was like really good. And then abruptly you break up. It's like you go through this divorce, and it's like, I wasn't mentally ready to give that thing up, almost like it's a real person. It's like a real part of you. So like, how do you navigate those early post-op period where it is just the most difficult in doing so?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is that you're bringing it up, right? Because what you're describing is grief. Mm-hmm. Our patients will grieve their relationship with food. And one, they feel bad about it because they're like, I should be so happy. I was counting down to my surgery date. I got through all those hoops. Why on earth am I not happy? Because exactly, put your age in, right? So I've been sharing a lot on my social media that I'm going to be 50 this month. And so having bariatric surgery this month, I would say for 50 years, food and I have had a relationship. And and it is a relationship, right? An emotional relationship. Food is friend. Food is comfort. Food is celebration. Food has always been there for me. Food is how I've avoided conflict. That can be a whole nother, you know, what role does food play in your life? That could be a whole nother podcast. But that relationship changes, and it is a breakup, and you will grieve. And this is one of the favorite things I teach on is I call it losing more than weight. The waves of grief and loss on the bariatric journey, on the weight loss journey. And so let's think of those. And back in the day, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross called them stages. We now know they're waves. We don't go through them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But the first one is shock and denial. Oftentimes our patients are like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? Right? Like, oh my gosh, I didn't know it was going to be this hard. I can't get protein and hydration in. Like, I don't know. Right in the beginning. Second thing she talked about. Shock and denial, bargaining, depression, which I'm going to call sadness. Oh no, anger, depression, acceptance. I had to do it right real quick in my head here. So I think I think the whole team needs to recognize these waves are happening for our patient. I think our teams need to know they're happening. And of course, their loved ones need to know they're happening and our patients need to know. So shock and denial. And then I believe anger is next, or bargaining. They kind of run into each other. So let's do anger. And you may get angry that you can't eat the way that you wanted to eat. And your portions are smaller and you can't be like everybody else. And you may have heard from your team that this is not a cure, but deep down you were really hoping it was a cure. And you're angry that you still have to work at it and you still have to think about food, right? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we'll see our patients bargaining, and maybe this doesn't happen so much in the beginning because you can't physiologically doing it, but I call this testing the edges. What does bargaining look like on our weight management journey? Do I really have to live all the time like I'm a bariatric surgery patient? What can I get away with? Could, like, maybe I live one way during the week in a different way on the weekend? I'm going to try that. And I'm going to test the edges a little bit. And what happens is, when I talk about that, is when we're bargaining, I want you to envision it summertime. Like, let's say you had two rafts, right? Rafts in the water. And, you know, you're playing a game with your kids or something, and you're trying to, like, put a foot on each raft and see if you can balance. That's testing the edges. What's going to happen? Your rafts are going to go farther and farther apart, and you're eventually going to fall in. Are you going to grab the raft that's been holding you up for 50 years, or the one that it's only been a couple months since surgery? You're going to go back to that old behavior. It may have been unhealthy behavior, but it was comfortable and you know it. Sadness. Mm-hmm. You miss it. You miss your relationship with food. And that's very, very normal. Your relationships may change. People you thought would be your greatest supporters aren't. And you grieve that. And there's sadness there. And then I promise you, eventually you get to acceptance of, like, okay, I have the chronic disease of obesity. I have the best tool on board, but it's not a cure. And I need to make sure I continue to live as a bariatric surgery patient, onboarding all the tools the rest of my life. And then you'll slip out of acceptance again. You go in and out of the waves, but you know you've made progress when you spend a longer amount of time in acceptance. And here's another kicker of why back to I cope with food. All those emotions I just mentioned, like shock, anger, sadness, right? Even acceptance, happiness. Mm-hmm. You've been using food to soothe those emotions. And now you can't anymore. So I remember having one of the surgeons present when I taught on this, and he was like, oh, now I know why they're so angry and irritable. Like, I thought I just gave them the best tool ever to make them so happy. One, they're grieving. And two, guess how our patients, well, really all of us often, what do we turn to during grief? Food.
Yeah.
Right? And that's been taken away. So we see our patients experiencing emotions at a greater intensity because they're no longer using food to soothe them down.
You know, we've talked the last couple of podcasts about the early days, and, you know, gosh, this is so, I'm waking up right now too. Uh-huh. I'm thinking about, like, I tell them the night before surgery, you're anxious, you're worried, you're not really sleeping well. Like, a lot of patients come into our practice now from out of town and they're in a hotel room. It's unfamiliar. Then the night after surgery, they have gas pains. So they're also, like, super exhausted. And so they're very emotionally, like, charged and weepy and crying. And I tell their loved one, like, they're going to cry. But, and I thought it was a mixture of like our basic needs not being met between like a little bit hungry and a lot of exhaustion. But actually, boy, that makes a lot of sense too, is that acute awareness. It's just almost the parallels to pregnancy, I always feel like, are just so intense that it's almost like you have this baby. And like, for me, I've been very open with the infertility thing. And then you have it and you're like, I've never been happier, but you're like a mess. The progesterone is all over the place. You're just like, just a weepy, exhausted mess, and you're not really happy. And it's like, I've never loved anything like this. I didn't feel that. And I think it's like that, like, oh, I should be so thrilled like everybody else. Like, look at all these people. And then social media, that's a whole nother, you know, dimension that's added that, well, they were smiling and walking 10,000 steps and doing all these things. How come I don't feel like that at all? Like, I can barely get up. I can barely stand up.
You are right on, Dr. Dovick, right? Like, it's all of that too, right? New environment. But again, think of how many hoops, and this is, again, a whole nother podcast of what our patients have to go through to get treatment for their disease. You don't have to do that with other diseases.
Right.
But all of the stress and everything they've been through, and oftentimes, is different per surgeon, but oftentimes they may be on more of a liquid diet. And so we've already changed their relationship with food even going into surgery. And so their emotions are all over the place, because many times our patients don't even realize how much of an emotional eater they are until we take the food away. And so maybe when they went through stress before, or they had worry and anxiety, on a scale of 1 to 10, they let their anxiety get up to a 3. And then they would eat, right? They'd eat that comfort food and they'd soothe with food. But now they can't do that pre-surgery or post-surgery. And so we have patients walking around feeling their emotions at an 8 or a 9. And that's why someone are like, whoa, what's going on? That's what's going on, right? And then we hope there's a person like me who can teach them the missing piece, to tell them this is what's happening. And we're doing that right now with education. So many patients tell me, I never even thought about that. Of course I'm grieving food. And then how are some ways I can name and show up to my feelings in non-food ways?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a conversation I have with people, especially when, you know, they tell me, you know, I had someone recently in our medical program who'd had Regain, and she's like, you know, I switched to working from home and I, you know, so I'm close to my refrigerator. I get frustrated with work and I go out and I find myself just standing there like completely unaware that I have even made the walk from, you know, the desk to the kitchen. And I'm standing in front of the open fridge, you know, and it's like kind of waking up, and then it's like, so then I have to eat. It's like I eat, and it's like, you know, so we talked about some different, I was like, you know, walk out to your mailbox.
Exactly.
Like, if it's just, you have to step away from the desk, walk out to your mailbox. You know, I always joke, I always tell people, pick up knitting, you know, like pick up something to do with your hands too. Cause for me, I know a lot of people also have that kind of tactile relationship with food. You know, we think about whether it's the chewing or it's having something to do with your hands. I think we're so used to, you know, you're watching TV at night, and a lot of times we're not just watching TV, we're watching TV and eating.
Exactly.
Or, you know, and something else. It's like, do something else with, you know, get a fidget toy, I don't know, like something simple like that.
And then they had a counselor or therapist like me on their team, educate them that eating behavior is not automatic. It feels automatic, right? When they go into the kitchen and take the food out of the refrigerator or munch while they're watching TV, eating is not automatic. The thought always comes first. Things that are automatic are obviously our heart beating, blinking, digestion. I'm so glad I didn't have to get up today and say, heart, please start beating today. Like, it's working.
Yeah.
Soon as every time we eat, we have a thought that comes first. And when we choose to eat, it's a permission giving thought, right? And if you're thinking, no, Laura, I don't know if I buy this. I don't know. I don't know. My car was just like in the drive-thru. I don't think I had a thought. Or I was just eating the donuts in the break room. I don't think I had a thought. If that was true, right? If eating really was automatic, you would not only eat the chocolate chip cookie, you would eat the plate that the chocolate chip cookie's on, right?
Right.
So we know when to stop. So with that said, one of the things I'm very passionate about is teaching our patients cognitive behavioral therapy skills on how to catch that thinking. And I often call it stinking thinking. Catch it, check it, change it. Right? So working the three C's of cognitive therapy, working with that patient who's triggered by being home and the refrigerator's right there. So there's the trigger. Slowing down. What's the thought? It's probably some stinking thinking. I deserve this. I'm stressed. If no one sees me eat it, it doesn't count. Just a little won't hurt. And then how to reframe that, how to talk back to that to then change the behavior. Those are the tools our patients aren't getting.
No. And it's hard. I mean, that a lot of our patients are not eating enough during the day and they're skipping meals and then they're legitimately hungry. And then the thought almost, it's like the conscious thought and the survival kind of mechanisms, I always feel like are at war because I know better, but I don't care. Like, I need this. And like you said, the stinking thinking, that is such a good way of putting it, that there is just such a drive or a self-validation as to why I deserve it. I had a horrible day at work. Like, get the bottle of wine open. I'm coming home. Like, I need this. I deserve this. Or it was an awesome day. Savor the champagne. We deserve to celebrate. And I can, you know, I can do this a little bit. Like you said, the weekend warrior versus on the weekday, I'll be good. On the weekend, I can do whoever I am. Boy, I mean, there's just so many things here. And to get back, to break through those habits of that overwhelming obsessive thought, like you're like, okay, there's the thought. I've recognized it. I know my triggers, but it's like, I want pretzels. I want pretzels. I just could use a little bit of pretzels while I'm watching this. Like, how do you like finally be like, I gotta give in. Like, I gotta take this edge off. It's so overwhelming. Like, how do you like make that voice go away? That's hard.
It's very, very hard. And yeah. So I teach on this as well. The argument in your head, I need the pretzels. I don't want the pretzels. I want the pretzels. I don't want the pretzels. I want the pretzels. I don't want the pretzels. And that patients will often call it the devil and the angel, right? Like, I have someone, one on my shoulder, stay on plan, go off plan. They're probably not using those words. It's more, you know, I want to eat it. I don't want to eat it. They've actually done some research on this. Actually, Judy Beck, she's one of the leading people in the CBT world, cognitive behavioral therapy, because she's like, I heard it all the time. She's like, I heard it all the time. You know, Laura, finally, I just ate the pretzels because I felt better. Right? Like, at least I wasn't thinking about it anymore. And so she started to do some research, like, on, okay, did the pretzels really make them feel better? Yeah, we could do a whole nother podcast on that with like what pretzels do to our brain. But what she found out, it was the decision they made to stop arguing with themselves that made themselves feel better. Right? So
decision.
Yes, no. Yes, I want it. No, I want it. No, yes. Yes, no. Yes, no. I'm just going to have it. Soon as they made that decision to stop arguing, the upset level goes down and they feel better. And then they eat the pretzels, and then we'll get our whole nother podcast material about eating those type of foods. But just as the decision to eat the pretzels made you feel better, the decision not to eat the pretzels makes you feel better. So I spend a lot of my time teaching patients on how to stop this argument. I want you to think about things we do every day, like brushing our teeth. Could you imagine if we got up every day and had an argument about brushing our teeth? Well, I don't know if I want to do it today. Maybe I'll just like brush in the night and not the morning. Or maybe I'll do the top or do the bottom. Like, you know, that's gross. Like, there are certain things we do. Like, we just get up and brush our teeth. Another thing. Like, just do it. Putting our seatbelt on. Could you imagine when we get in the car, if we had to have this huge argument with ourselves? We would never do it because this causes discomfort, this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We just do it. And so if you can work on realizing that and just make the decision and often just say, I'm not doing it, and leave the kitchen, like no choice, no pretzels, and then get involved in something else. Don't keep arguing with yourself. You will feel better. We've all experienced this with movement when we want to be active. The hardest part is the argument we have in our head, right? Yeah. I don't want to. It's too hot. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll just work out a little bit extra. I'm too tired, right? Back and forth, back and forth. What happens when you finally just say, you know what? I just got to do 5 minutes. I just have to do 10 minutes.
You do 30.
Right. And you made the decision to stop arguing with yourself and the discomfort went away. It works. I promise.
Yeah.
Did that answer your question, yeah. Dr. Dovick?
Yes, it does. I like that. Make a decision, own your decisions, go with it. And then it becomes a habit in a good way. And I mean, like you said, everybody kind of like battles with this. And I just think about even myself and standing there in the kitchen with a fork. I'm like, stop eating, put it down. Mm-hmm. Why are you standing here? Why are you eating this? What are you doing? And then sometimes when you're in the moment, you're like, oh, well, at least I ate it all because now it's gone.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow, yeah. I'm not going to have the same argument with myself because it doesn't exist.
Right.
Until
we've all been there.
Until somebody brings it in the house or you somehow bring it in yeah. your house. Like, I'm just going to stop down. I'm just going to get a little bit. But yeah, I mean, or like you're looking in the fridge and you're like, where is it? And you're like, screw it. I'm just going to go out and get it. It's like, yeah. what am I like? Why are you now you're in a car to go get this thing? Like yeah. you're making it like very challenging for yourself. That's something you don't really want to have.
Right.
And
yeah,
it's really, really hard, I think. So yeah, I mean, there is that early post-op, I think the grieving, then the kind of the ongoing and the habits that you set. Do you feel that there is something behind sort of how you do a surgery in that first month or two that sets the stage for long-term? Or do you feel like if you had like kind of a rough first few months, you weren't really like on your game. Is there a comeback story to be had even after surgery?
I have never been asked that question. I have to say in my experience, I think I've seen both do well, right? Like those who have their tools and have onboarded from the beginning and then those that struggle. I mean, sometimes our patients experience unexpected complications they had no control over.
It's true too.
Yeah. You know, and they still come back. I hear more patients in the beginning who are worried that they've screwed up their whole bariatric journey, right?
Always.
Like I broke my tool, or they hit that normal 3-week stall or 5-week.
Yeah.
And speak to this and they're like, yep, see, I told you I was going to be the only one bariatric surgery didn't work for. And I think that's so important when you need to be around other patients or providers who can educate, no, this is normal. I get why you think that. No other program has worked for you. So of course your brain is like, I've had 50 years of, yep, I was going to be the only one. The tool's not going to work for me. But that's where they need to trust their team and have a team that you can't screw it up. And again, even farther out, and you probably feel this way too, Hannah, if he was like, oh, my pouch is stretched or I've broken my tool. It's not working. And I always say, when you go back to living as a bariatric surgery patient, your tool will work for you.
Yeah.
When you live as a sleeve patient, your tool will work. When you live as a bypass patient, your tool will work. Are you doing that? And again, it's back to, are you using all the tools? And usually not. Usually some of their treatment tools, they're not doing anymore. They're not recording, right? They're not using a food tracker. They're not going to group. They're not getting enough protein, right? So guess what happens in other diseases when you stop using your treatment?
Yeah, they get worse.
Your symptoms come back, right? Yeah. Same as with obesity. If you stop treatment, you will get your symptoms back, and a symptom of obesity is regain, right? And so when people are struggling with regain, we need to give them more treatment, and they need to get back to what works.
So let's talk about treatment specifically from your standpoint. Do you feel like you talked about it's support is so helpful, hearing other people's journeys. I'm not alone. I feel that too. There's strength in knowing that, again, you're not isolated on this island trying to go through this. And I think that those patients who don't reach out for support in any shape or form are the ones that just don't do well. Mm-hmm. But so when it comes to your treatment, do you feel that the best is a more one-on-one approach? Is it a more group approach, a support group, which there's all kinds of talk about doing a whole episode on something? Or do you think it's a hybrid of all these things and each patient is different? Like, how should we really tell our patients, go see Laura for this, and this? Like, what should they do?
Yeah. So I think it's a hybrid. I mean, not everybody needs individual therapy. I think I would start with group. I believe in what I do. So I'm in therapy because I think therapy is just good self-care. But I think what will happen is you'll be in support group, or you'll start realizing, oh, I'm grieving food, or I'm having, or my relationships are changing, or a topic will come, like, I need to talk more about that. I look as the group support program, we kind of scratch the surface in support group. But if you want to dig deeper, that's when you go to individual therapy. Now, if you're struggling with a depression, right? So we know depression can be exacerbated after bariatric surgery. Often gets better. It can get worse. If you're struggling with binge eating disorder, this is a high risk factor for poor outcome after bariatric surgery. And it looks different. Binge eating disorder doesn't go away. It just looks different after bariatric surgery. Individual therapy. Okay. If you're struggling with transfer addiction, especially substance use disorder, alcohol use, therapy.
Sounds good.
No, it's all so, so, so needed. Yeah. And, you know, Glennon Doyle, you're a fan of hers, I think.
We can do hard things.
Yeah, I text her that like every other day.
You did today, actually. In fact, she sure did. And I mean, we can. And when we're talking about our feelings, you said earlier, you know, there's this, your feelings for so long have been muffled down to a level 3. And then that's your trigger to, okay, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to do hard things. And so I'm going to make sure I mask that. Now, you talk about this, now we're blowing the roof off. We're feeling these big feelings, and now we are feeling our feelings. And as Glennon put in her book, which kind of like made me like stop, that whole chapter on like feelings are meant for feeling. And how do you kind of like cope with that without going to another way? Like, I know we talked about like going for a walk and those sorts of things, and you know, those things might come, but like, how do you cope with those big feelings? And do you believe that all feelings are meant for feeling, as Glennon puts in her book?
I absolutely believe in that. And Dr. Dovick, I also want to compliment you on calling them big feelings. I don't believe we have positive and negative feelings. I think we've been saying that too long, and there is no such thing as a negative feeling. There's big feelings, there's pleasant feelings, there's unpleasant feelings, there's comfortable feelings, there's uncomfortable feelings, but there's not positive and negative. And so how do we, one, recognizing that this is something I have to work on. I mean, the whole emotional intelligence stuff and affect regulation didn't come out until early 90s. So there's many of us who were probably raised in homes that didn't get a lot of skills on naming and feeling feelings. For many of our patients, naming and feeling feelings wasn't safe in their household. And so, again, start in that support group, you know, maybe my online course. But if you want to go deeper, individual therapy. And some of my suggestions, what I've learned is, first, you have to develop a feeling vocabulary, because I would often give the assignment, whether it be in a group session or an individual session, okay, I want you to do a food mood journal. I want you to write about how you're feeling when you're eating this week. And they'd come back to me with blank journals. I'm like, okay, something's going on here, because this is happening over and over. They're like, I don't know how. Like, I didn't know how to write. And when you ask people to start naming some feeling words, you usually hear happy, mad, and sad. That's usually all they have. But there's so much more. There's lonely. There's anxious. Shame is a big one our patients experience. There's excitement. There's joy. There's anticipation. And so I work with patients first with developing a feeling vocabulary. And that can certainly just be like Googling a feeling word list. But now there's an app out now called the How We Feel app. And that has been helping many of my patients. That actually, I learned from a patient. She brought it to her therapy session. Yeah. So she's like, oh, this is helping me. I'm like, okay.
They always have the best thing.
That's good.
A food mood journal. Well, I would love to, if there was like one thing that we could give to patients. I love that idea of giving them like, okay, we're always like, here's your protein tracker, your fluid tracker, take your vitamins, here's the alarm, you know, like we're hitting all these checks. But and even sleep trackers, that's another one that I think is, you know, we don't talk about that as much, but man, I've never thought of a food mood journal where you really like stop and just like feel the feeling. And why am I trying to like stifle this thing down, you know? Yes. That's a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because let's say it's really normal. We don't want to feel the big ones. I mean, it's not like, yay, I can't wait to grieve. I can't wait to feel disappointment and sadness. Like, I'd be really worried about you.
Yeah.
But the only way to feel is to feel. And I teach my patients that feelings are not emergencies. You will get through them. Emotional eating is about numbing and escaping. And transfer addiction is about numbing and escaping. And because I want my patients to have every tool for success, all of us are worth more than numbing or escaping. We need tools to cope through, right? We need tools to cope through those hard days at work. We need tools to cope through a disappointment, right? Because the numbing and escaping eventually wears off, right? The numbing wears off, and now you have two things you're upset about. Whatever you were trying to escape and numb, and now you're mad at yourself because you went off plan and you got into your emotional eating roller coaster, right? And so I try to teach those skills. So like naming the feelings and then, okay, what is this feeling telling me, right? Like our feelings are data. What do I need right now? What am I hungering after? You know what? After a hard day, it is so healthy that you want to decompress and put your feet up, right? Mm-hmm. Your feelings are worth more than French fries, okay? Your decompression needs are worth more than French fries. Are there other ways you can do that? Same with celebration. You said, good day. Let's get the champagne out. I love to celebrate. It's probably one of my favorite things I love to do. I was the mom who said, I don't craft, but I celebrate. I love to celebrate, and your celebration needs are worth so much more than food. And, you know, people think we're drowning our sorrows in chocolate chip cookies, and we are. That's a component to emotional eating. But the research shows the actual number one feeling we eat for is happiness and joy. We love to feel keep the good feeling going, and we do that with food. We do it well with food. Again, let's celebrate. It's a healthy need. But let's do it in a healthier way.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm like, keep going. I know. I mean, all seriousness, I want to attend your workshops because I feel like it's going to make me a better surgeon. I want Hannah, I'm going to make our whole team do it because I want all of us to like, the perspective is like, yes, of course we've seen that. We've thought of that. I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years and your learnings, your perspective are just, again, so spot on. Like you just get it. Mm-hmm. So tell us what are some of the workshops that you have available that patients might be like, yeah, I'm going to sign up for all of them too. Like, how do I do this?
Yes. Well, first of all, I would love to come to your team and do some trainings on some of the things we talked about. Just for you or team. What I have right now is, like you said, how do you scale yourself? I asked that question a couple of years ago and I created an online course because I spoke at a conference for bariatric patients. There were probably 700 patients there and I was teaching like basic foundational headwork skills, like the thought comes first and emotional eating. And they were looking at me like, I've never heard this before. And it just broke my heart because I was like, how have you never heard this before? And this was pre-COVID. And then people were asking me, do you see people virtually? And I was like, no. And then so I started, never say no. And then I started thinking through, well, how can I reach more people with headwork skills? And I created an online course called Foundations in Headwork for Healthy Weight Loss. And I'm teaching the foundational headwork skills. And we've kind of talked about all of them today. So the first two videos, it's a 7-week course. It's self-paced. The first one, we're going to talk about squash and stink and thinking and introducing you to cognitive behavioral therapy skills. Second two, focused on understanding your emotional eating roller coaster, how to exit it. Third one is on setting healthy boundaries. Could your yes be sabotaging your weight loss? And the fourth one is building and using a support team. So those are what we address in the 7 videos. So I'd like to invite them to do that. LauraGrabo.com. Also you can sign up for my email list. I do specialty classes. That's been a new service I've been offering, through my practice and teaching people all over virtually. But I have one that I did on emotional eating where we really took a deep dive into understanding our emotional relationship with food, 8-week class. And another one I do is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy strategies on the bariatric journey, an 8-week, pretty intensive CBT training. So.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah, they just go to lauragrabo.com.
We'll put all of that in the show notes as well for anybody that's listening. So you can check that out.
And anywhere else that you want people to find you? I know you're on Instagram.
Yes, Instagram, just bariatric.therapist. Would love to invite you into my social media community, my online community. Some people are still on Facebook, so I'm on there as well. It's just Laura Grabo, LMSW. And yeah, I would love to connect with people.
Laura, thank you so much for being here.
This is
honest to God, this is my favorite podcast that we've ever done. I mean that.
We're going to force you to come back.
I would like to come back. I'm so, like I said, it's still the missing piece, and I'm so passionate to educating as many patients as I can.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Awesome. All right. Well, you can always follow us as well.
Find us on Instagram at Dr. X Dietitian, at Dr. Dovek, at HannahSkyler.rd, or on our website, drxdietitian.com. You can sign up. We'll make sure to have a great episode guide with some of this information as well. So sign up so you get that right to your inbox, and we will see you next time.
Thanks, guys, for listening.
Bye-bye. Bye.